Hey, do you guys like video game news and commentary? Do you like it twice a week? Do you like it in half-hour chunks? Do you like me? Oh man, do I have a combination for you. Check out the new video game podcast on the Frog Pants Network called Boop, B-O-O-P. You can find it at frogpants.com/boop. All of the subscription information is there. You get it on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts, we got you covered. That's video game news you can use on the Boop Show, twice a week on the Frog Pants Network. Go to frogpants.com/boop for more. Thanks, everyone.
I have
current geek.
This is Current Geek. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Current Geek, the weekly proceedings of the meetings of the Frog Pants All-Stars, geeks of the world and you, to keep you current on all things that matter most. I'm Scott Johnson. That is Tom Merritt. Hello.
Hail, Scott Johnson.
Hail, Tomdra.
I've been watching a lot of Rome.
Yeah?
Now that it's on Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
So I kind of want to do this a lot.
Oh, yeah. Look at you.
That gets misinterpreted, so I try not to do that.
You know, that first season had, you got your Caesar in there, yeah? And
yeah, you got your Mance Raider.
Yeah, your Mance Raider Caesar in there. I like that guy a lot.
If you like a little Mance Raider in your Caesar, you'll like Rome.
Mance Raider salad. Gross. It's all wildlings. Mm. All right. Hey, look at everybody standing here and doing a show. We're going to do one. Oh, by the way, I should tell you, it's Friday, August 1st, 2014. And we're ready to do another show. And joining us are special guests, like always. Let's just bring him on in here. His triumphant return to the program. Third time on, I want to say. Ladies and gentlemen, Brecky is here. Hi, Brecky.
I am Groot.
Yeah, you are Groot. How you doing? Does that movie open for you this weekend, or what's going on?
Yeah, yeah. I just came home from seeing it 4 hours ago.
Oh, ooh. Okay. Just quickly here. Points out of 10. Where are you at with it?
Strong 9.
Wow.
Strong. Yeah.
Strong.
Second best Marvel movie ever.
Also strong.
And probably the best movie of the year.
Strong.
So
Strong 9 is my favorite ancillary Marvel character, coincidentally. So it's a great.
I didn't like that they cast Strong 9 as a man.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Then they had that period where there were just 9 of them and they were all on a team and then they scrapped that. What a terrible time it was for Marvel.
No, so everybody's raving about this movie.
Deservedly so. It gets off to a slightly slow start, but then as soon as a couple of things happen, it's just amazing from beginning to end. Every single character. I mean, this movie doesn't suffer from the characters not having had their solo movies before this, because every single character, you grow to love them. They have their quirks, they have their foibles, they have their motivations, they have everything. I mean, you care for each and every one of them, even Drax.
92% on Rotten Tomatoes, 96% from the audience on Rotten Tomatoes.
Wow.
Yeah, that's where I'd land as well.
Hard to be much higher these days on Rotten Tomatoes. Also joining us, a man who... he needs no introduction to me, but he might to you. It's Dan Patrice. You may know him from a little segment he does on the Final Score show, if you listen to this network at all, where he talks about tabletop gaming and board gaming. He's a huge nerd and perfect for this show. Dan, welcome to the show.
Thanks a lot. We're here to talk about video games, right?
Yeah, yeah, all video games, all night. I hope you're prepared.
Oh, man, don't you undersell yourself to this audience. Dan has been one of the most active people in helping us prepare for the show that I've ever seen. It's been awesome.
Yeah.
And not just video game stories either.
Yeah, yeah, and that's appreciated.
It's Friday. I mean, the house could be burning down behind me, but it's Friday and I don't care because it's Current Geek.
Yeah.
Woo!
It's my favorite. I'm going to just make all these comparisons tonight. hey, so also, Nerdtacular wouldn't have been the same without your awesome and deft running of the board game stuff, along with a couple other folks, and just made the whole tabletop experience at Nerdtacular really shine. So
it was pretty amazing, the feedback that we got from everybody and how everybody really liked it. And just it's always one of those things that at the end of the show, everyone's like, man, we really should have done more of this. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, it goes so fast and so much going on. So I'm excited to see you next year.
Well, as soon as the thing started, it seemed like it was over. And just like this show, it begins now.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering, as do many others in high public office.
Take it away, Tom.
Thanks to CaddyCon for submitting a very popular story on subreddit at currentgeek.reddit.com. Go submit your stories there as well. Starting this past Wednesday, Amazon Prime members here in the United States who choose no rush shipping, That means you get it in a week to 10 days instead of the 2 days you get for free with Amazon Prime. If you choose that no rush shipping, you get a dollar credit for Amazon Instant Video.
That's brilliant. I mean, not that I prefer, I'm already doing Prime and I feel like Prime's good and I know I could rent with that money and stuff for things that aren't on Prime streaming. But I feel like I wouldn't be able to give up the convenience of the quick shipping. But I suppose if I had an item here or there that didn't require any kind of speed.
Doesn't matter when it gets here, yeah.
Yeah, I guess this is a really cool idea. I mean,
it's only a dollar credit, though.
Yeah, it's not a lot, right? Like, you're saving them probably, I don't know, let's say you're saving them $3 for not rushing it.
Sure.
So it'd be nice if you got an equivalent to that amount. But moreover, and you guys can chime in on this, like, Brecky, do you think this is just Amazon saying, look, we've got to, if we want to be Netflix, like, we need to have Netflix numbers, and to get that, we got to be creative and leverage the power we have as Amazon to do it.
It could very well be. I mean, the Amazon Prime is a number of things, and I personally think the biggest one is the free 2-day shipping of millions of items. Mm. And if people start opting out of that part of Amazon Prime, they're left with, well, instant streaming and music, which is Netflix and Spotify, basically.
Sure. They're trying to be all things to all people. Dan, yeah. Do you think you can you wait a few extra days for your copy of the Seven Wonders expansion?
Well, you know, it probably can. I mean, we want everything now. That's the thing. We want instant gratification, and we pay a lot for it, for the for that right to get it in 2 days. But, you know, for things that you don't care about, I'd be fine getting that credit, because, you know, I get Amazon Fire and the on-demand stuff. There's not a whole lot of great things on just Prime. There's still some movies, but it seems like everything in the world you got to pay for. Yeah. You know, so if they could make this like maybe one movie credit or something like that, or I can't remember how much a lot of these things cost, like if they're $1.99, mm-hmm. like a dollar. If I'm waiting for two
packages. You
get a standard
def TV show for $1.
Oh, is that what they are now? Is $1. All right.
Actually, I think those are even $1.99.
Yeah. So, I mean, if they were to make it so that, hey, here's one movie watch for one package. If I got to wait for two packages just to watch one episode of something, it doesn't really seem like I'm getting anything for it.
Yeah. Right.
And with shipping, especially, long distance shipping is so expensive now. They're trying to save money, is what this seems like. So they're trying to save extra dollars. They're going to try to entice you to just wait so that they can save on that shipping. Yeah. So they may need to make it a little bit more, but it's a good start.
It's hard to say which side is benefiting more from this idea, the shipping side trying to save money or the Prime side trying to do more, push more video. But for me, it would be a bigger value if they just straight up said new release rental in the first, let's say 15 days after you place your order, you can see a new release rental for free.
Yeah.
Because what else do you need? I don't need Amazon. Like,
too
I don't
much
want
thinking though. Put a time limit on it. Suddenly, I'm not interested.
Yeah.
I'd like an Audible credit.
Yeah, Audible credits, Comixology credits. How about just a, hey, I got it. All right, Tom, stay with me here. How about Amazon coins? All right. And
I like where this is going.
Yeah, little tokens, right? And you can spend them on whatever the hell you want in the Amazon ecosystem, and they just say, hey, you got 4 coins for letting this shipment take longer to get from Malaysia or whatever, and you could go spend that on whatever you want.
Can I play Amazon businessman for a moment?
Yes.
If I'm Mr. Amazon accountant, yeah. I'm like, yeah, all of your ideas are more expensive than giving you a dollar credit. So guess what we're going to do? Give you a dollar credit. Don't want a dollar credit? Get the free shipping faster. We don't care. Yeah. I think this really is a soft push of like, oh, you know what I'm ordering? I'm ordering some replacement vitamins for, you know, that I know I'm going to be out in a month. I don't care if they come right away. Why not build up some of these credits over time that I can then go buy something with? And Amazon's hoping you forget that they exist and don't use all of them all of the time. But the benefit is if you do go use them, you may start to buy more things from Amazon Prime Instant Video because it gets you in the habit.
Damn your common
sense.
Well,
movies don't cost them anything to send to us. Is that right?
Well,
I mean, a little bit. You know, a little bit of bandwidth, but not much.
Sure.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it's part of...
I mean, it's almost no skin off their back to give us one of these, space bucks for a movie. Yeah.
Well, I'm sure that it costs them royalties. We should make that clear.
We should make that clear. And Tom, you're very Jeff Bezos-like in your reply, except you didn't have the laugh. Other than that,
I need to get rid of a little hair.
Yeah, a little hair less. A little. Yeah,
I need to buy the Washington Post.
Yeah, make a bad phone. Then you're good.
I'll be ready. Yep. I'll be ready for Pants the Monkey.
Oh, what?
Pants the Monkey on the Current Geek subreddit. Did I mention that at currentgeek.reddit.com?
No, but when you do, it makes me feel really weird inside. So, yes, please do.
Pants the Monkey or currentgeek.reddit.com?
Currentgeek.reddit.com.
Why does that make you weird inside?
I don't know. It's exciting because when I hear people are out there on the interwebs, like weird news. Services, okay. You know, it's great.
I got you.
Oh, yeah.
The Salt Lake Tribune is reporting. Oh, Utah connection.
Yep.
The Salt Lake Tribune is reporting that San Diego Comic-Con is warning Salt Lake Comic-Con that it needs to change its name. Now, this isn't the first time San Diego Comic-Con has tried this with another Comic-Con, and they always lose. There are more than 50 other conventions called Comic-Con. They tried it with Chicago Comic-Con once. In addition, Dan pointed out that Mile High Comics announced that they lost $10,000 attending San Diego Comic-Con and won't be attending next year. So maybe they'd be welcome at Salt Lake Comic-Con or Salt Lake Comic Place.
Comic or whatever Place. They end up calling. Comic Convention. Comic-Con, some have suggested. So yeah, this isn't the first time they've asked folks to change their name. And some have done it, some haven't. It seems like a little bit of saber rattling in the sense that this is a cease and desist and not a straight up subpoena, or, you know, this isn't an actual lawsuit yet anyway. And the Salt Lake organizers are saying, nope, we don't think this has any weight. We're not gonna, we'll defend this vigorously. We think this is ridiculous. And they didn't say whether they got this cease and desist during San Diego Comic-Con or got it before that and waited to talk about it publicly while San Diego was throwing their big thing. Difficult to say. It would be an interesting move by Salt Lake if they did. But there's no denying one part of all this, and that is that Salt Lake City Comic-Con went from didn't exist a year ago to juggernaut status among cons. It is the second largest opening of any con in the history of the country here in the United States. And right now is somewhere up in the 145,000 something ticket range, which puts it second or third place in total number of potential tickets sold. So it's no small player now, and it kind of came on suddenly, and it's drawing big names, and it's got, you know, a lot of people, a lot of Fan X style people coming out and doing booths. And when you get, you know, Shatner and Adam West and Stan Lee all on the same stage, that's pretty good pull. And it's not, it may not be the cast of, you know, Age of Ultron, but it's, you know, it's not too shabby. So I don't know what to make of it, though. Like, I don't know if this means that San Diego is actually nervous that a big con's like going to cut into their bottom line. I don't think so. They're huge.
No, it's about trademark protection. They see Salt Lake getting big, and they don't want people confused thinking that Salt Lake and San Diego are run by the same people. And if Salt Lake does have a controversy of some sort, people blaming San Diego Comic-Con, thinking it's the same organization.
Sure.
It's one of those, can't we all just get along, or can't we all just exist? Like, when you say Comic-Con, do you ever say Comic-Con without using a city? Like, hardly ever? And if you...
For San Diego, I do.
Emerald City Comic-Con.
Right. Well, that's the thing. If you ever say Comic-Con, people know you mean San Diego. Yeah. I think they're worried that if you're saying Comic-Con, that you mean Salt Lake. But nobody ever refers to any of the other ones as just straight Comic-Con.
Yeah.
But that's like Kleenex. And Kleenex is a trademark, even though we all say it sometimes to mean tissue paper.
Yeah.
Companies need to aggressively defend their trademarks today. San Diego Comic-Con uses a hyphen in their name. And the other ones don't, basically. They just type Comic-Con in one word. And that's how they're getting around the trademark issue. But now everybody's saying that, you know, San Diego Comic-Con needs to defend this trademark, and they need to do so as aggressively as possible. Otherwise, they risk losing it because, you know, sound-alike rights and so on.
Well, a reminder that if you're a regional attendee of Salt Lake City Comic-Con, I will be there in a Artist Alley table this year. So come on by and shake my hand and be non-controversial.
Whatever it's called.
Whatever they
call it. And they're using different dates, aren't they?
Totally.
I mean, are they worried about overlap where they're, you know, maybe Salt Lake one year is going to say we're going directly against the other ones?
No, in fact, they're September, whatever it is this year, I forgot already, early September. They're a week, they're a week after Dragon Con. They actually have a nice little position. So people who go to those other cons, like, you know, Bill's going to come there on his way back, Bill Duran from Dragon Con, and hang out here as well. Right after, like literally the week after. So it's actually a pretty good placement. I don't think they're worried about that so much.
Well, I mean, what I was saying about everyone getting along, you would think that every time somebody mentions a Comic-Con, and it only helps to push other Comic-Cons. Like if you fell in love with San Diego, you're really going to want to go to, when can I go to another one? Oh, right. Salt Lake is next month. I can go to that one too.
Well, right. And let's not fib here. I mean, I know it, and everybody else should know it. This is really good PR for Salt Lake, whether they know it or not.
Yeah.
You know, the you know fact that they would do
this. Is it necessary for?
Who?
San Diego Comic-Con.
Yeah, exactly.
They're the only one who loses by this because they don't need the help.
Yeah, they'll be fine. is the bottom line. And we're not, whatever. As much as it's gone crazy and we're taking up the entire Salt Palace and all of downtown is now Comic-Con for a weekend and it's really fantastic, this isn't San Diego. And it's not that legacy of 30 years. And there's so much more to that than there is here. We could build toward that, but it's the second year. So this is just, I guarantee you our organizers are hearing the news that they got a cease and desist and went, ooh, sweet dude. Cause even if they have to, they'll just change the name. No big deal. It's really not that big a deal to change it.
Wait, you have a palace made of salt there?
Yeah, it's called the Salt Palace. It used to be where the Jazz played, and then they moved
it. What happens when it rains?
It gets all the snails die. I don't know. I have no idea. Something like that.
Is San Diego worried that some of these big movie people are going to just start going to other ones? I mean, isn't half of the draw to San Diego is that it's so close to L.A. that all these movie, you know, it's real easy for them to promote their products?
I doubt they're worried about that so much. Maybe down the road if one of them gets too big. I think they were just more worried about brand confusion.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's why it's even more baffling that if they're not really worried about losing what they're losing, I mean, it's not really even a slice of the pie they're giving up.
Yeah.
It still baffles the mind why they would do something like
this. It is a little closer to home. I mean, you know, Phoenix and Denver and others aren't nearly as big as this, and neither is, you know, Emerald City. So all the kind of the surrounding cons haven't been able to kind of put up the numbers that make San Diego even wink an eye. But this does.
I can't wait to start Venice Beach Comic-Con.
Oh, dude. You be in charge? I'm in. Let's do it.
Yeah. It's just Derek me reading a comic at the beach.
All right. Sounds really good. All right. Well, let's move our attention to Asia, man.
Oh, poor South Korea Hanwha Eagles baseball team. You had never win games, so you had to install robot fans in three rows of bleachers. Ostensibly, this is so your fans at home can log in and watch the game as if they're in the stadium and have text messages show up on LED light boards that maybe no one's looking at and your face displayed on the face of the robot. The Eagles have lost 400 games over the last 5 years. So this is what they have sunk to.
Okay. Let me ask this though. Can I pick the point of view or I just have to live with one guy's fake eyeballs?
You can actually like control the robot and do stomping and clapping and change the perspective a little bit. Yeah.
That's crazy to me. But what's the fun then? I mean, I get it for one time, like, you know, I understand vicarious viewership, like, say, the Dota 2 International, right? That was awesome. And it was really fun. And one of the best parts about that was you didn't have to watch streaming video on Twitch or on ESPN to see it. You could log into the game and spectate in real time, in engine real time, and watch that game and hear commentary. That's really fantastic, but it's such a different medium. When you're talking about a baseball game, you want the air in your face and the hot dog dude yelling at you and the, you know, the popcorn and the beer and the whatnot. You don't want to just vicariously sit in a robot's head. I think it's odd.
Well, in that fixed view from let's just say, I think it's in right field, you know, that fixed view from there, that's not really as good as watching it on TV unless they, I don't know if they don't have any coverage normally on TV, but if you sit there on TV, you get all the angles, you get commentary. Sure, it's pretty cool. I mean, I think you can put up like text messages to things. I mean, I don't know how much I was trying to find out how much they charged for these things or if it's just something they were just offering.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I can't imagine how much they're losing from those seats, not selling those seats. I mean, if they're not that good, they might not be selling
them. My guess
anyway.
Is they're not losing a cent because they probably never filled those seats to begin with.
Mm-hmm. Well, Brecky, if you were at a game, well, okay, let's say your team, what do you guys play over there, shuffleboard or whatever in Sweden? What are you guys doing? What do you got? What's your big sport?
Mainly soccer and hockey.
All right, hockey. I was just giving you a hard time. So let's say hockey. And your team, the
smorgasbord,
the Gergenberg Flinderflaps. All right, that's the team.
Sure, they're one of my favorites.
Right, they're pretty high up there. They
had the leading scorer last year.
They have lost. They have
you,
lost.
You mispronounced flapping flaps.
They've lost 400 games in the last 5 years. What about that makes you want to go vicariously watch that game? I mean, I understand if this was the Chicago Bulls during their high time when Jordan was winning every game, then those would go for a premium and you'd want to be in those eyeballs because you couldn't get a ticket otherwise. But when nobody's buying tickets, what's the value?
There is none.
See,
I think.
Told you.
The only value that I could imagine is being able to say to my friends, hey, check out this game on TV. My face is going to be on one of the robots in the stands. Yeah.
But is it their face, though? Is that how it works,
yeah.
Tom?
Oh, yeah, you can have your face show up on the robots.
Right. I'm coming around. I'm coming around to this idea now.
Yeah, now you like it. Huh?
Well, you know, like Sheldon Cooper in his that episode of Big Bang where he was on that screen moving around the house in the robot body. That was all right, I guess. So that'd be kind of fun. But who cares? I'm more interested in female archetypes in comic books. I hope you have something for me there.
I do, actually. Funnily enough, at one of those Comic Cons, I can never keep them all straight. It's all run by the same company anyway. An image of Gal Gadot in her Wonder Woman costume was shown for the first time. Is this the Wonder Woman we have been looking for?
She looks fine. I think she'll be.
I just saw a picture of Xena. Where's this Wonder Woman?
Oh, the Xena argument. So I don't know that I'm not super defensive of this movie coming up. I am kind of excited. The leaked footage of the Batman signal in the sky and Superman hovering over him and him in his battle armor. All that stuff looks kind of exciting to me. As a fan of like the way Frank Miller kind of did all that, that's kind of exciting to have her in there and know that we finally got the holy trinity of comic book character slash archetypes in the same movie. That's exciting. It's not so much she looks like Xena. It's that DC and Warner Brothers are afraid to show any actual color in anything they make anymore. It's kind of a Legendary Pictures problem. This is what they do. Even their logo is basically a weird muted brown.
There's a little bit of red in the sparks behind her.
Kind of, but it's like dirt blood red, like dried blood on a pillow kind of red, which isn't all that exciting. And meanwhile, Marvel has embraced the colors of their worlds. And Guardians of the Galaxy, I can only assume, Brecky, has done that same thing.
It was a Technicolor rainbow.
Yeah, these purples and these crazy, the colors that exist in the Guardians of the Galaxy comic books are represented here. Why everyone is so afraid, or why everyone at DC is so afraid, to just give us some color to their characters. It doesn't have to all be so bleak. And is it because Batman and the Batman recent trilogy was so dark, they felt like they had to be consistent with that and just forgot that Superman sort of inhabits a different kind of world? I don't know. It's weird.
Well, it could just be the effect of them just showing the pictures, just trying to focus more on her than, you know, and then the surroundings are just kind of extra. And we want to really see what she looks like as it. You know, there's, man, I'm with you, Scott. I'm a huge DC fanboy, and I am waiting for something positive to come because no matter what happens, no matter what they show, everybody's like, oh, it stinks. It don't matter. This isn't good Wonder Woman. But finally, people were pretty excited because she looks good. She looks strong, like a strong character. She's not all sexed up for anything. So it's really what we need. We need some good, positive. I mean, some people were saying a little bit too much skin, but I really think she looks fine. I think she looks like a strong female character.
That's also them not reading the comics very much because she's more dressed here than she has been in some runs of her comics. And I don't feel like there's an over sexualization happening here, but even if you want her in like, you know, neck to toe coverage or something, what we need her to be is an Amazon princess. She needs to look like a warrior. She needs to have that sword and she needs to look like she could do some damage. And I think she's going to probably pull that off. This all comes down to if that story's any good, if what that little piece of video that leaked is really kind of the tone of what we're getting, I'm kind of all in on this whole Frank Miller effort thing.
Yeah, in fact, comparing her to Xena, I don't think does it a disservice. She is an Amazonian warrior, and Xena comes from that same gestalt. So sure, I think that's appropriate. I think that's fine. I think maybe she's a little skinny for an Amazonian warrior, but that's Hollywood, right? I don't think you're gonna find too many actresses. And too many directors willing to cast them.
Yeah.
Except for Joss Whedon with Kaylee, by the way, in Firefly. But overall, I think this looks like a very promising Wonder Woman.
Yeah. So we'll see, I guess. Next year, come late. Oh, wait, did it get delayed? No. I'm thinking of Warcraft. Yeah, no, this is next year.
Not yet.
Yeah, not yet. Everyone's afraid of when Star Wars comes out, and everyone's afraid of when Avengers hits, and I don't know where you put your movie, but I'm pretty sure these guys are locked in. So anyway.
You don't put it on the same weekend as Avengers and Star Wars.
Why. I mean, I don't know if you guys remember, but the Warcraft movie was set for that release date, and then Star Wars announced it, and they were like, bumped to 2016. See you guys next year.
They dropped that garage door in Harrison Ford, hoping.
That's a good controversy.
Mike P. Kennedy tipped us off to Wired's selection of the best 8 sprites in video game history. This is one of those things that everybody loves to have an opinion about, right? Yeah. It's good clickbait for Wired, and I don't even mind that. Trevor Belmont from Castlevania, anyone? Mega Man, Giant Enemy Crab, and Little Samson? What do you think? What do you like?
Where's Link?
Link?
Yeah, where's Mario?
Link and Mario are not in there, are they?
You know who I would like, and I know it's not a very detailed sprite, but Pitfall Harry.
Good one. He's not bad.
And they're saying 8 best sprites in video game history, but all of these are NES titles.
Yeah, I was going to say that. I'm skipping through here.
Chris Kohler never got anything but an NES, all right? Give him a break.
Yeah, these are all NES titles. That's interesting. Yeah. I actually would put, I know it wouldn't be, the whole point of this article is to dip into our nostalgia for old stuff, but I would actually put a lot of what I'm playing what's it called? It's the game I'm playing all the time now. Something Bros.
Smash Bros?
Broforce. Thank you. Broforce on Steam is chock full of some of the best pixel art ever. Now, they owe a lot of their, I'm sure a lot of their inspiration to what has come before, but they're nailing it. This is a small indie game, an indie action game. That's fantastic. Love it. I keep going back to it for some reason, but those guys all look really good. So, yeah, I'd say broaden this out a little, but the ones he picked are fine. I actually think, okay, so I'm going to pick one, and it's still NES, but it's kind of underrated, and that is the motorcycle in the
Excitebike,
yeah. They conveyed a lot with very few pixels, and it came off as a, motocross looking bike dude, even though it was as rudimentary as you can get. So, hats off to those guys for nailing that one. You guys have a favorite?
I'd like to add Sonic as well.
Sure.
I mean, he was the face of a generation almost.
Well, yeah. If they're sticking with 8-bit, then that wouldn't work because it's 16. But still, you're right.
Oh, there was never an 8-bit Sonic. You're right.
Yeah. That's a good point.
Yeah. So
even the guys from I like the guys from Contra. It's kind of similar to some of the other guys that they had listed on that list. But like Link or Contra, those are some pretty classic ones from being a kid.
Contra. Mm. Contra 8 more.
Toy Bazaar.
Sure.
64.
Yeah. Those count.
Good sprites in there.
Yeah. Good sprite. Well, have a sprite and whatever.
Great taste of Lyman.
Sprite, two bananas. Sprite keeps coming up because you just said it, Brecky. On the morning stream, there's this challenge, I guess. It's not unlike the milk challenge. They say that you cannot eat 2 bananas and an entire liter of Sprite without just barfing everywhere.
That's a... I don't want to curse. That's a lot of food.
It's a lot of food.
That's a lot of liquid,
but Daryl,
too.
So yeah, our Trek leader, nerd says he can do it.
It's the liter of Sprite that I got the problem with.
Yeah, no, I think that's the killer, right? The 2 bananas I can deal with. But apparently those 2 together are real trouble. And our Trek nerd Daryl says he can do it. So next week we're going to put him to the test.
Especially if you make the Sprite flat. If you do that, I bet you it's probably a heck of a lot easier, too.
Good point. Yeah,
nice then
point.
Again, they give you a bunch of time to do it. And just before the show, I should point out, I had a banana. And I'm drinking 1 liter of Coke Zero during the show.
Oh,
so,
gosh.
So who knows what'll happen.
You are a crazy man.
Brecky's going to blow up any second now.
Yep.
All drinking I need is Mentos. Carbonated is like setting it to heroic.
Nice.
I need to build a new deck for that.
Yeah, you do. Hey, look at this. Before we get to our big main stories, I did want to mention that Scott made another podcast. Yeah, I know. That seems crazy, right? Not really, because it's kind of a thing I do every day with my friends anyway. So I thought, hey, why don't I just make a show out of this? It's called Boop, B-O-O-P. Yeah, like the sound old video games make. It's news and commentary. Imagine like a daily tech news show, but for video games. Imagine that.
What?
Trademark. Wow. Something.
Should have called it Daily Video Game News Show. If you'd asked me, that's what I would have.
I totally could have. I decided to make something weird and hopefully memorable. So there it is. It's Boop, and you can find it at frogpants.com/boop. It's also number 4 currently on the iTunes top 10 for video game podcasts. You can check it out there as well. And wherever podcasts are found, please do.
In case you missed a look at one of the best dressed beauties of the early 20s, here's another look at her. Had enough?
Let's talk about EA's subscription plan that came out this week. What is EA Access, at least from the basic view that we have so far?
So it's coming to the Xbox One. It'll either be $5 a month or $30 if you want to pay for a whole year in advance. So you get about half off if you pay for a year in advance. It's in limited beta now, but it's going to be coming soon to everyone. They haven't given us a date. And it contains a vault with complete versions that you can play anytime of games that aren't terribly old, like FIFA 14, Madden NFL 25, which is Madden NFL 14, but it was 25th anniversary, and it's kind of confusing, but there you go.
I agree.
Peggle 2, Battlefield 4, those are some of the titles in there. They're going to keep adding titles, and you're going to get the ability to play new games up to 5 days before release without having to pay anything. Then you'll get a discount on those games, and if you buy them right on the day they come out, your progress from the trial version will be saved. So you can just keep playing them from where you were.
Yeah, it's interesting because every show I do this week has had some commentary about this. But the short version of how I feel about this overall is, I think it's a little too early to tell whether this is a deal I want or not. I think the price is right. There was some confirmation someplace, and I wish I had a handy, that this is not in addition to gold. If you don't want Xbox Live Gold, you don't have to have that to then have this. You won't be able to play your games online because that's the whole point of gold, or one of the main points of gold. So I think they kind of do need to go together, and that's not as good a value proposition. The bigger issue for me is not so much the value or the price or whatever. I think all these points you've just named are good, and it's a solid kind of service worthy of paying for it. Reminds me a lot like Netflix in a lot of ways, kind of an all-you-can-eat thing, although, I don't know, there's some limits to that. But the bigger issue I have is the confusion of the marketplace that this could cause for end users who are not as savvy as us, who aren't paying attention to all these little nooks and crannies of what's happening in gaming. They just know they want games. So if you're in there and you're like, oh yeah, I'll sign up for this and I'm playing Madden and it's free, the previous version, and I got a 5-day head start plus money off the new one, and this is great, I love this. Ooh, and the new Call of Duty's coming out. Sweet, I'll just do that. Well, no, you're not going to be able to do that because that's Activision. Is Activision going to have their own little plan, their own little program? And is Ubisoft going to come in and do the same thing?
There's some in games for gold. So if you're going to have that Xbox Live Gold,
right,
as many people pointed out after we talked about this on DTNS,
yeah,
there's also a way to get some games for free with a subscription model already.
Right. It's already kind of built in. So when Sony came out, and I'm not saying Sony's being completely benevolent here, but when they come out and say, we don't think this presents a good value to PlayStation users, which is why we turned it down, that's twofold. One is they've got their own subscription thing coming and rental system coming with PlayStation Now, which is now an open beta. But also this is them saying straight up, this doesn't feel like much of a value given that the companies who own the platforms are already doing something similar. So when they do their thing...
This is them saying EA wouldn't write us a big enough check, so no.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, who knows? I don't know how those conversations went, but it does create weird confusion in the marketplace. How many of these subscriptions are you going to have? Are you going to jump ship on one to get to another because there's one game you care about that another publisher makes and you'll do that for 6 months? I guess you could do that. It just seems like a little weird and kind of out there to me, and I would rather have an a la carte solution in the platform itself. People have essentially chosen Steam for that on their PCs. They've chosen Live for that with Microsoft, and they've chosen PS Plus for the PlayStation platforms. To give now these granular subset choices, I just think is a little weird.
Who wants to bet that Games with Gold will not feature any EA titles from now on?
Well, that's a good question though, Brecky. But do we know, or maybe Microsoft is in bed with this idea so much so that they're taking a big chunk of it, or perhaps they're, you know, benefiting in some other way, or maybe this exclusive thing, and Sony's not saying, maybe this is such an exclusive that this will be the platform people go to for weird subscriptions like this. I don't know what skin Microsoft has in this particular game, to be honest.
Here's the problem with EA. Now, this is kind of how I look at EA. Like 20, 25 years ago, we're sitting around a table and mom says to us, hey, Uncle EA is coming over today. And I'm like, wow, I'm going to do my homework, my chores. Uncle EA comes, he brings his great presents a few times a year. I get to play with him. Then fast forward a few years. Now Uncle EA, he isn't quite as exciting. He's regifted a few things to me in the last few years, just with different colors. You know, and then mom says, you know, Uncle EA, he's been good to you. So be nice, play what he's got for you. Mm. And now we go to present day, Dan. Now Uncle EA isn't quite himself. He's not the rich millionaire playboy he once was. He even fired his butler and maid. He doesn't talk to the kids much anymore. In fact, Uncle EA, he gave me a present last year that didn't even work. So now mom looks at Uncle EA and she's like, what harebrained schemes do you have for us today? So I don't know if I can trust what Uncle EA has for us anymore. And, you know, what kind of shenanigans are they going to pull next? I mean, like you said, these things may not go together very well. We don't know what we're going to get. We could just get re-gifted titles for the next few years for $5 a month, and then we're, you know, it's not.
Yeah,
I want to see what's coming.
There's a trust issue, right? There's that time Uncle EA showed you his wiener, and you weren't sure what that was about. Like, these things are bad, right? Tom's thing.
It was blocked out. It was in a shower, but yeah.
Tom's, your theory, and I don't, you know, we don't have to reiterate the whole theory. People can go to DTNS and listen to it, but I really liked what you said. It was based on no facts, and nobody said anything about it. But your theory about Microsoft maybe or Steam's sudden sort of disdain for Windows and Windows 8 and suddenly pushing Linux and Steam boxes and everything may have been the aftermath of a fallen through deal where Steam and Microsoft may have made the Xbox One a Steam box. And that may have been their big play. And then that kind of all fell apart for whatever reason. Yeah. Totally resonating with me.
I have no basis in fact for that supposition, but I think it's very likely that Steam was talking to Microsoft about something before Gabe Newell got mad and Microsoft didn't tell him what he really wanted to hear.
Yeah.
And what if there could have been some partnership between Steam and Xbox so that you actually get your games that you buy on Steam available on the Xbox through Xbox Live Games with Gold? I'm actually looking at the Games with Gold list right now, going back to October 2010 I'm only going back to June 2013. No EA titles since then.
Oh, interesting. So
I've got a new crazy theory, which is Xbox has been trying to get EA in the door for Xbox Live Games with Gold, and EA wouldn't do it, and this was the only way to get them to do anything close to it.
Interesting. This is like their play on PC with Origin. They're not going to let their certain games are going to make it on Steam, but they're not going to put their big titles on there anymore because they want you to get it exclusively through Origin. I mean, this makes sense. They want to make a little play for whatever power they have in the market, which makes him kind of crazy Uncle EA a little bit.
Grandpa Xbox won't let Uncle EA through the door since he showed Thomas penis.
Right. That's what I'm getting at. Brecky, any final thoughts on that?
Uncle EA in a bathroom without any doors after that.
Any final thoughts, Brecky, on any of this weirdness?
Not really, no. Not at the moment. I'm just curious to see what's going to happen if Ubisoft or Activision or whoever does something similar. I also want to know what happens to FIFA 14 on this service once they release FIFA 15 and 16. Mm-hmm. Do we get to keep our old games or will they just keep the newest one?
More importantly, so that's been brought up and it hasn't been answered, but also there's this question that arose about DLC. If you buy, I don't know, let's just say a Battlefield. Okay, that's a good example. Battlefield 4. Which is on this list that's in the vault to start with. What about Battlefield 4 DLC? Are you paying for that separately? When you cancel your subscription, are you still the owner of that DLC but not the other thing you were essentially renting? There's a lot of questions still that haven't been answered yet about this that I think are important. I mean, I think they have to get around to doing that. We live in a much more complicated ecosystem than games ever have been in before. There's physical, there's digital, there's DLC, there's 1,000 weird subscriptions and strange little microtransactions. Because we live in that world, you can't just simply turn it on and off and then, you know, hope for the best. So anyway, we'll see how it goes. Comixology did something weird. They DRM freed almost everything. Tom, what'd they do and why'd they do it?
Yeah, not almost everything. A lot of things. It's publisher specific and a lot of publishers are not on board. But the publishers that are allowing it, like Image, for instance, will let you back up your Comixology purchased comics, going back to however long you've been a Comixology customer, as a DRM-free file. You can do, I think it's PDF or CBZ formats. And you go to the easiest way is go to the website, and then go to the backups tab once you've logged into Comixology there. And then you can back them all up to your hard drive, DRM free. Read them on whatever device you want.
Yeah.
I've got almost the entire run of The Walking Dead on my hard drive, DRM free now.
No, that's pretty cool, actually. That when you think about what you've actually bought through there, and if you were with one of the publishers who was doing this, like EA or EA, Image has been doing this already for a long time. They've been pro DRM free for a very long time, and you can go to their website and actually pay less money per comic for the most part than you would on Comixology and get PDF and CBZ versions of their stuff. So it doesn't surprise me that they're all in on this. What do you think the chances are? Anybody can answer this. The chances of Marvel or DC getting on board with this idea at all?
Slim.
Yeah, slim to none, right? I mean,
yeah.
There's no
somewhere in between slim and none.
in that ballpark.
Yeah.
Well, and then the other flip of the coin is that it's almost pressure that maybe they feel like they have to in the future. If if they want to make some money and they see how well it received this is going to be. Because I think this might be something that's going to bring a lot of people to actually get on to Comixology a little bit more than they have in the past. So, I mean, just this idea has already gotten me. I mean, I've already bought two things since the announcement. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's kind of started me to get, which is a sticky slope because I've been trying to stay away from comics as much as I can because I have so many comics from when I was a kid. And now, as you can see, I collect a lot of board games. So if I'm going to start collecting a lot more comics, you know, this is a better way. And it brought me in. So, I mean, if you can see DC and Marvel, forget it. I'd be broke before you know it.
Kill us. Right. But see, Marvel's got their Marvel Unlimited app, which I use and have a subscription to, and I really quite like it. But it's DRM'd up to the wazoo, as my dad
would
say.
Right.
Yeah. So why would they change for that? I don't think they're going to.
Well, here's what I agree with you, Dan. I mean, what I feel like now, I used to feel like if I read a comic on Comixology, it's like renting it. I'm just paying to read the comic. I don't own it. Now suddenly I'm like, crap, I actually own these. I actually have all of these Walking Deads. Yeah. I have these Invincibles that I bought. This is really cool. And it makes me feel better about buying more comics because I will be able to move them to other devices and read them in other ways that before I was like, yeah, they're probably going to go away someday. They'll just change the DRM and I won't be able to use them.
Yeah. Plus, well, yeah, because the big scare with Comixology before the acquisition was, what if these guys are so small, they get destroyed, and then we just lose everything we did? Yep. Then it was like, you're horrible, Amazon, for making us go to your website to do this stuff on iOS. And now we're all kind of coming back on, DRM free. Well, maybe we can be pals again. So good move.
We're so fickle.
Yeah, aren't we, though? Back and forth, man.
We're type of people that we like things in our hand. We like to be able to feel the comic, but when you start saying things like DRM free, well, maybe I don't like that thing in my hand anymore. Maybe I'm happy to have it on a screen again.
Yeah, that's how I'm thinking about it. Before we get to our pop quiz, Tom.
Before we get to our pop quiz, yeah. I want to thank K Bouton 1 for the Comixology link and Surprise Truck for the EA link on the subreddit.
Beep beep. That's my Surprise Truck. All right. Tell me about the tech history book and why people would want to buy that. Speaking of Amazon, what's that?
Well, because there's this guy I know who's really good at drawing things. Mm. And I spent a lot of time researching history of technology and I'd put it all together like by date. And I was like, wow, I could put these out month by month, but I already have the chronology of tech history out there as a book. Why would they want to buy it month by month? I know. I'll ask my friend who draws things really well to make drawings for these and then it'll be something cool. And that's what we have. Yeah. Scott Johnson illustrates the tech history monthlies. Tech History August just came out. You can find it at tommerrittbooks.com or just by searching Amazon. It's 99 cents. There's at least three things that happened in tech history that are important for every day, sometimes more. And Scott's got a bunch of great illustrations in there. So go buy it.
Yeah.
Just stop arguing.
It's a dollar, dude. It's so cheap. Go pay for it. It'll be good for you.
America scores and wins.
Oh, that music only means one thing. Brecky somehow avoided doing this 2 weeks ago, but damn it, you're going to have to do it now.
Yeah, I kind of wish I was here last week or 2 weeks ago.
You would have nailed that one, dude.
I did, yes. Yeah. I was sitting here screaming at Tom and Mr. Gavel McLeod trying to answer those questions.
Well, chances are you're going to do just fine today as well. This is the pop quiz. We ask you guys questions in your areas of interest. You try to answer them the best you can. Tom scores this and keeps track of who's doing what and does so in such a weird way I couldn't tell you how it works.
Bro, I was thinking you weren't going to say weird this time.
Yeah, it's totally weird. This is when
I drink every time he says weird.
Good. If you get it, you get this. If you don't get it, you get that. And I'm going to start. You know what? Let's start with Dan. We'll finish with Brecky.
Here we go.
Dan, you ready
for
this?
Is it bad that I dance every time I hear this music? It's
the greatest music in the history of the world.
Just means you're alive.
That's right. You're not dead inside. Here it is. This is board game, tabletop game trivia. Okay. Ooh. You're an expert. Anyone can see in his video. In fact, I'm about to switch over to you. If you can look in that the rear there, he's got a ton of, that's all board games, just stacks of it. Yeah, look at that. Shelves of it and shelves of it. So we're going to put you to the test. Here's your first question. There are eight of these. Sir. What Monopoly token was replaced with the new cat token? I love that we went right to a freaking Monopoly question. It's the best.
The iron.
Tabletop.
Did you say the iron?
The iron.
You are correct. Nicely done. Tom, nothing weird there. We're good.
That's 1 point for correct answer, Scott.
All right.
You want me to look up the rule?
No. Don't. I don't want to cause
weird. Yeah. It's weird, though.
It is
so
weird.
It's
so totally weird. All right. Next question. Who designed King of Tokyo?
Oh, that was Richard Garfield from Magic the Gathering.
You are correct. Good Lord, man.
Extra half point for quick answer.
Nicely done. What company is responsible for the Amazing Labyrinth?
This
is the best name ever.
Ding Dong Industries.
You are incorrect. It is Ravensburger.
Hold on. Oh, Ravensburger. They're very good.
Oh, Ravensburger? Is that it?
Okay. Yeah.
Hold on, Scott. I need to...
Hold on, he's checking. Okay, the
no, no points for that.
No points? All right. I like the glasses. That's the best part of that. All right. Next, how many dice are included in the base game of Zombie Dice?
Ooh, that would be 12.
You are off by one, 13.
Well, you lose a tenth of a point for being off by one.
All right. Next up, in Trivial Pursuit, what category is represented by pink?
Entertainment.
You are close enough. Arts and entertainment is correct.
You only get 0.9 for being close enough.
Back to a full point. All right, excellent. Next one. What year was Carcassonne released?
Ooh, that's 2001.
You are so close. 2000 is the correct answer. 1 year off. Didn't really take
That's
off.
That's where you got the meeple from. They pretty much came from Carcassonne.
And Mike, who puts these questions together for me, spelled it Carcassobe, but I knew what he meant. what is the name of the rule in Cards Against Humanity that allows a random card to be played from the white deck by a ghost player?
The Scott Johnson rule.
You are incorrect. It is the Rando Calrissian rule, I guess.
Hold on. Actually, referring to Rando Calrissian as Scott Johnson does get you a half point. So.
Half a point.
Don't let anybody ever say that Galvin McLeod is not fair and just.
Yeah, it's just his owner's a little weird. Next up, final question. In Small World, I know you like that game.
Mm-hmm, great
game. What race receives a bonus token whenever they take over two occupied regions? Which race?
The orcs?
You are...
Oh, it's the skeletons.
You are correct, but too late.
Sorry, yeah, I got it wrong.
That's all right.
Actually lose a point for knowing it and not getting it right.
Excellent. All right, nicely done. Now hold on to your pants because we will not score you until we have gone through what we do with Brecky, and then we will see who wins. Brecky, are you ready for your questions about films again, all made before 1999?
I think I am.
All right, these are new questions.
I don't know.
Not last week's, but totally new ones. Here you go. Sure. In Back to the Future, what band does Marty wake up George McFly with when posing as Darth Vader from Vulcan?
I know this. This is it Black Sabbath?
You are incorrect, and you started doing a V a little bit. It's Van Halen.
Oh,
close. Well, you're in Sweden. I can't blame.
Well,
you.
But. He loses a quarter point because he didn't know it. And he said,
Gotcha. The Empire, yeah. The Empire Strikes Back. What is the name of Darth Vader's Superstar Destroyer?
I have no idea.
It is the Exeter. Exeter.
And he gains a quarter point for honestly admitting that he
I'm sorry. Known. Executor. Not Executor. Executor. Sorry.
It's the Egg Eater.
The Egg Computer. All right. What work of Philip K. Dick is the basis for Blade Runner?
I read this just the other week. Do androids dream of electric sheep?
You are correct. Nicely done. I could feel your brain cranking on that.
A Philip K. Dick question.
Right? Yeah, good job. And Tom's a big Philip K. Dick guy. So, do android? Oh, sorry, that's the answer. And the last one. Here's the next question. In Aliens, what food? You know what? It really looked like the question was, do androids dream of electric sheep? That's
yes.
Yes,
Scott, they do.
Okay, great. In Aliens, what food does Spunkmeyer throw down into his plate saying, man, what's this crap supposed to be?
Pierogies.
You are incorrect. It is cornbread. Cornbread.
Oh, yeah, that rings a bell.
Yeah, it does mean as well, but I had to see it to believe it.
Half point because cornbread is an American food and sort of the pierogies of the South.
Yeah, see? All right.
Oh, there you go.
Fair enough. In Predator 2, what is the name of the voodoo priest? I can't give you a hint.
I don't know.
It is, hold on, King Willie.
Quarter point, he did not know.
And here's how you know that I know that. Hold on. I have a clip. It's right here.
Who the hell is King Willie?
It's from that movie. Pretty good, right? Next up, what kind of portable computer does John Connor use to hack into ATMs in Terminator 2 with his stupid friend? Hated that kid.
Was it an IPAC?
You are close, but the Atari Portfolio. Oh. Actually, you weren't close at all. The iPad came out like 5 years, or 8 years ago or something. Yeah. In Star Trek Generations, you know, the one that was all right, but not great. Which mm-hmm. character does Data shove off a boat in the holodeck? It's the very beginning of the film.
Worf.
You are incorrect. It was Dr. Crusher
who was pushed off. Worf walked the plank, and that was funny. Right. So Data pushed her.
He ended up in there anyway. But you're it's a trick question, kind of. Final question. In Independence Day, what college did David Levinson, a.k.a. Jeff Goldblum's character, go to?
I have no idea.
You are actually, you are correct that you don't know. It is MIT. MIT is the proper answer. Only he could take a System 7 notebook and destroy an alien race with it. Tom, how'd they do?
Wow, it was close. Brecky, mostly on admitting honestly that he didn't know, what got 2 points. Mm-hmm. And Dan ended up with 2.8.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Congratulations, Dan.
Woo! Way to go, Dan.
Good job, Brecky.
Dan is the man. Nicely done. There's no prize. You don't win anything. You just have to stand here grooving on it. what's next? Ooh, this right here. Check it out.
The future promises even more startling things to come.
Jill!
Whoop, didn't mean to push that. All right.
Jill!
Jill.
Barry.
That was my prize, to hear Jill.
Yeah.
Board side.
Oh, you could hear Barry.
Barry.
There you go. Joel, I almost read Joel Schumacher. Actually, whose is this one? Dan's, that's yours?
Dan's got all three of these.
Dan, I want you to name the one you like the most in this group.
Of the, well, actually, the one on the right are basically the same, too. I was just an example of the right. We can go with the movie one, since we were talking about stuff earlier.
That's totally fine. Is this right. The Marvel one? Is this one you're talking about?
Yeah, so like Joel Schumacher did in the 90s, I think Marvel's going to get so cocky after making a gazillion dollars today alone, almost on Guardians of the Galaxy, that they're going to greenlight so many borderline projects. And eventually one, within the next 5 years, one's going to bomb so horrendously, and it's going to cause people to second guess the love of all things superhero and potentially cause the end of a great thing, which is what we love right now, all these great superhero movies.
So do you think it'll be like an ancillary one, or will it be one of the big A-list, like Avengers level things that will tank and then cause everybody to kind of back off?
I think it's going to be like a B-minus list. Like, they may even try Daredevil again, and it's just going to be so horrendous, and we're going to, you know, almost as bad as Batman and Robin, where we're just going to be like, well, we got to take a break from this superhero stuff for a little bit.
Mm.
I don't know if that's my wishful thinking, since I'm such a DC guy, and I just really want DC to be the savior when they come in, and you know, with Justice League, but it may be a long time before Marvel throws up a goose egg.
Well, Brecky, you're still in the glow, the afterglow of Guardians. Do you think that you know, there'll be oversaturation and we'll be sick of these things soon?
I don't think so. Not at all. They release just two, maybe sometimes three a year. So even if one of them is a stinker, it's quite easy to forget it. I mean, Thor 2 wasn't a great movie, and Iron Man 2 wasn't a great movie. But they were all, you know, better than average. And I don't think we're going to be seeing a Howard the Duck movie anytime soon, even though there might be.
I heard there's maybe a little hint in this Guardians thing, a little
Howard
something.
The Duck?
Yeah. I'm not going to say yes, but yes.
Yeah, I heard this. I heard they make some visual reference or something.
Yes.
And lots of other weird ancillary strange Marvel characters from the weirder kind of Silver Surfer era kind of crap, which is what it blows my mind. Okay, this is the thing I got to say about Marvel. I mean, they have done a thing with Disney that I just didn't think was possible. They took B-level characters and made them into A-list. And that was, and I mean Iron Man, and I mean Captain America, and some of these other guys who have been suffering on the vine for a while, at least, you know, certainly in film and even in the comics. They were no Wolverine or X-Men, and they were no Spider-Man. But somehow they seem better than those two things now, which is just crazy to me. It wouldn't surprise me if Guardians is as good as it is, the way you say it is and everyone else tells me it is, and I'm going to go see tomorrow to find out for myself. it seems like it's possible for Marvel to treasure trove like crazy into the weird character, you know, the weird character list they have, and pull out some really strange stuff that doesn't seem like it would ever work and somehow make it work. Ant-Man will be big proof of that if that's good. Could they move on to Squirrel Girl? Or
there's Doctor Strange.
Doctor Strange is on the
Doctor Strange is coming.
Coming, yeah. Yeah. So I feel like if we're near saturation, I don't think we're there yet. I think we're
Now this could be down the road, because like you said, some of these projects they've got a whole bunch in the pipeline. And if they greenlit something like Moon Knight or something a little more obscure that they feel they're going to push into it, you know, Guardians was kind of almost like a softball, because everybody loves team ups and everybody loves it's comedy, and I'm sure it's going to be great, because I mean, who doesn't want a talking raccoon? Yeah, you know, I mean, yeah.
Now I'm kind of into it. That's what's weird about all this. I used to hate Rocket
Raccoon.
Well,
he's a badass too, and that's what's awesome about him.
Right. But he annoyed the hell out of me in the comics. Like, it was like, but it's almost like he needed a movie to truly shine for as the character he is. So now he finally gets to be cool, because for the longest time he was on Howard the Duck terrain for me. So I don't know. Is it Tom? How are you feeling about this? At some point, people quit making vampire movies or quit making genre films in a certain area for a while, and then go back to science fiction or fantasy or something. Is our heroes going to suffer the same fate?
We saw that big calendar that Marvel has, where they have already figured out the dates that they're going to release all these movies that are untitled, because they don't want to let that part out of the bag yet. That's a lot of movies, if you look at that. Mm. That's a lot of momentum to carry on. And I'm not saying it's impossible for anybody to carry that on, but I don't even think it has anything to do with the source material. Because, Scott, you rightly pointed out, like, a lot of these characters, like Black Widow, who would have thought that would ever be a popular character?
Right.
And it is. So sure. Could they do Moon Knight well? Yeah, sure. Maybe they could. But I just don't think you can sustain it forever.
Yeah.
They've already sustained it longer than I think a lot of people expected. So I'm not saying they won't continue to sustain it for a while, but that calendar goes out to 2017 or beyond?
2028.
2028.
Yeah, they've said that they have movies planned all the way up to 2028, but officially 2017. Yeah.
They just can't keep the momentum that long. I think it's humanly impossible.
Tom, do you know how old you and I will be in 2028? I don't want to talk about it.
You're retired.
Yes. It's podcasting.
Remember when I said Moon Knight would suck? Scott?
I was right.
I was right, I said.
Right.
It took till now to find out. Well, I think it's fascinating.
Scott, wake up.
Remember when I used to call you weird?
Yeah. Oh, those days. Those were good times. I don't know how it's going to go, but it's an interesting theory. I do think that it's cyclical, and the industry goes through these periods of spy movies and then zombie movies and then fantasy and then sci-fi, and you know.
That's a good point. The superhero comic book movie is already peaking. Like, I already hear people grumbling all the movies are freaking comic book movies. When are we going to get something new?
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to work against them as well.
Yeah.
And if you look at it, if it's Marvel or nothing, I'll take Marvel any day of the week, because even though I'm a DC guy, those movies are still fun to watch and they're really great to get into.
Yeah. And by the way, everyone just go watch the Nolan trilogy and just be reminded that Batman stuff was awesome. It was really, really good. Mm-hmm. They just need to get back to figuring out what they need to be now, and they'll be fine.
According to IMDb, it was better than Citizen Kane.
Yeah. Well, that's the second one, the Dark Knight Returns one? Yeah. It was a hell of a movie. It was really
Citizen
good.
Citizen Kane is no Citizen
Kane. Really, really good.
Yeah, so they can get it back. Are we
getting another Citizen Kane movie?
Yeah, when it was Rosebud.
2028.
I don't want to spoil anything. 2028, finally, Citizen Kane reboot.
Rosebud's Revenge.
You know, it is an interesting thing that they've never rebooted that movie or tried to modernize it or something. I watched Walter Mitty, and that's a remake of a 1944 film, and didn't like it very much, but... you know, there's why not? Why not pull that one out for another run? And I guess everyone's afraid to, because
I hope they're afraid to.
Yeah.
Yeah. We talked about Citizen Kane on my movie podcast, and we discussed this very thing. Why isn't it getting a sequel or a reboot? And we mentioned that very same thing. I mean, I don't think anybody dares touch Citizen Kane with a 10-foot pole, because everybody loves it. It's a classic.
Yeah. So why would
Rupert Murdoch won't allow it, because everybody will know it'll be about him.
There's that.
Nice. He is Rosebud. All right. There's your show, everybody. What a fun day. You guys are great. You guys are rad guests. Can I just say that?
100%.
Yeah. You just have the right.
This was awesome.
Right,
you guys are great.
Right mix, right vibe, right everything. We really, really appreciate you both being here. Let's this go around the table and just give everybody a chance to point people in their directions. Brecky, what's going on with you and where can they go?
CSICON.net, CSICON.net is my podcasting network where I'll be doing a lot of great things. There's a review of Transformers coming up tomorrow. There's a review of Guardians of the Galaxy coming later next week, starring August personages from the podcasting world and stuff.
I might be familiar with what's happening there.
You might be.
Yes. I might be, yeah. that's very exciting, very cool. And Brecky T on Twitter, follow him there.
Yes, I am.
Dude, Dan, what's going on? Where can people go?
You can check me out on the Geek All-Stars podcast. It's primarily a board game podcast. This week coming up, we've got a top 11 what to try and what to buy at Gen Con, which will be in a few weeks. And you can also find me at Geek Jock Blog on Twitter.
And you'll be at Gen Con, so people can come up, say hi.
Yep. Yep. I'll be doing there's a real good panel I'll be on. It's Friday from 10 to 11. It's called Gaming for Good, where we're going to talk about doing gaming for charity, where you run charity events and just by playing board games or any other games and raising money for it. So it'll be a fun time.
What a cool name, Gaming for Good. I like that. Mm-hmm. Well, good. Well, it's great having you on the show. And Tom Merritt, anything from you, sir?
Just reminding people that it may or may not be safe to plug a USB device into your computer. Go to dailytechnewsshow.com to find out what you need to know about that.
Yes. Oh, and a quick programming note. Tom Merritt will be in Italy next week?
No. It's in September.
Sorry, September? Oh, that's not till September.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm a giant idiot then. That's all going to land perfectly because it's right around
the
time.
We are going to have to figure out Dragon Con at the end of August.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I'll be in Italy the first week of September.
That's what it is. So it's right around, and that's the week I'm in. I'm at Salt Lake Comic Con, so I won't be here all day Friday. So there is no show that weekend, but we got time before that. We'll keep you guys updated on what's going on.
Listen, are you allowed to say Salt Lake Comic Con?
Oh, jeez.
Are you going to get sued for saying it?
Salt Lake Con. I don't know. Lake Con. I don't know what they're going
to
do.
I'm not saying that the Pope wants me to come to Rome, Scott.
I know. You couldn't say it.
I can't say that because it's not true.
The Popa. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, well, give him our best. I know it's not canon, but it's fine. I don't know what that even means. Hey, that's it. We're done with the show. Thank you guys for being here.
I want to talk to the Pope about canon law and say, now, is this canon in Star Wars?
I love that idea.
If you could talk ex cathedra about that, ex cathedra, I would really like you to make Han shot first, like Dogma.
Yeah. Could you stick that in? Sure. Why not?
Write it in pen.
See what the man's going to see what he'll do for you. He's pretty progressive. So you never know. Current Geek on Twitter. It's at Current Geek. You can follow us there. You can follow me at Scott Johnson. You can follow Tom at Ace Detect. Our theme was created by Andrew Allen and his fantastic trio. Actually, I think it's just by him, but that's fine. Currentgeek.reddit.com is our Reddit. You can go to currentgeek@gmail.com to send us emails. We love those. And currentgeek.com for everything else. It's going to do it for me, for Tom, and our guests. We'll see you next time.
Hi, it's Jeannie again. Let's continue exploring the history of Westeros in Game of Thrones. Today we're looking at the Children of the Forest, also called the Children. Just who are they? Legend says they lived on Westeros in primeval forests for thousands of years. They worshipped the old gods and carved faces into weirwood trees or heart trees in place of temples. Technology was not part of their culture. Instead, they had a great knowledge of the forest and its inhabitants. They used bows made from the weirwood trees and blades made of dragonglass. They're also said to have great wise men known as green seers who used very powerful magic. Then, 12,000 years ago, the first men from the east migrated from the land bridge from Essos, destroying their forests and their sacred trees. As we learned before, they fought for 2,000 years until agreeing to the pact on the Isle of Faces in God's Eye Lake, which lasted another 2,000 years. Then the White Walkers invaded from the northernmost region of Westeros. They brought death and destruction to everyone, the first men and the children, allied against the common enemy. They successfully fought them back, then helped Bran the Builder build the wall. Because of all of these wars, the children had dwindled in number significantly. By the time the Andals invaded Westeros, they had practically disappeared. Next time, we'll talk about the Andals. Have questions about the history of Westeros? Or is there something you've always wondered and would like me to talk about? You can reach me at Tyrion'sLanding.com or Gmail and Twitter at Tyrion'sLanding. The music used is from Kevin MacLeod.
Hi, and welcome back to Legal Geek. This week, we take a look at wiretapping laws to determine whether Frogpants friends Veronica and Ryan did anything illegal in recording and posting the phone call of them trying to disconnect Comcast service last week.
I'm just trying to figure out here what it is about Comcast service that you're not liking, that you're not wanting to keep. I mean, why is it that you don't want to keep that service?
This phone call is a really, actually amazing representative example of why I don't want to stay with Comcast.
Wiretapping laws have protected telephone, personal, and electronic communications since the late 1960s, and these laws have become more vital over time as privacy rights erode away for the general public. Federal and state laws prohibit any unauthorized interception, recording, distribution, or use of a private conversation, although there are numerous limits and exceptions to this law. One limit is consent of one or both parties to the recording. 38 states and federal law allow wiretapping of any conversation when one of the parties consents, which would automatically protect Veronica and Ryan as participants on this call. However, California is one of the few states that requires consent of all parties to make wiretapping legal. There may be implied consent of the Comcast employee here, because his company informs customers that each call may be monitored or recorded. California law has another important limit that it applies only to confidential communications. In other words, those conversations where an expectation of privacy is present. It would likely be impossible for Comcast or its employee to prove that they have any expectation of privacy on a business call from a consumer such as this. The bottom line is, Veronica and Ryan are safe from federal and California wiretapping laws thanks to consent and/or the call not having an expectation of confidentiality or privacy. Thanks for listening, and thanks to all the nice people at Nerdtacular that said hello and encouraged more of this segment. Please provide feedback and legal-themed questions as segment suggestions to me on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy.
Welcome to another iteration of The Geekly Scholar. I'm Rich Straffolino, and each week I'll be highlighting an article with a geeky focus written with scholastic rigor. This week's essay comes courtesy of The Atlantic, entitled, Why Are All the Cartoon Mothers Dead? The author Sarah Boxer delivers a compelling indictment against an oftentimes baffling narrative device employed in some of the most beloved animated films. Boxer is not exactly making a fresh observation here. Even a casual film fan knows that mothers in Disney movies often don't have long for this world. Still, Boxer makes this article stand out by keeping the tone as humorous as it is blistering, and by showing how the trope has been turned in modern incarnations. According to Boxer, the modern twist on the dead mother theme is that instead of an evil stepmother coming in the mother's place, as in Snow White or Cinderella, the dead mother instead makes way for the emergence of the awesome father, generally someone with a character flaw that the death of the mother provides the means for eliminating. The example Boxer enjoys being Finding Nemo. Boxer also shines light at the ridiculous nature in the way mothers are eliminated in these films. The awesome father trope takes on some bizarre turns in this Oedipal reversal, which Boxer delights in detailing. The best is from the movie Barnyard, in which the male cow protagonists all have udders. Boxer is amazed at the phallic connotations that abound as a result. But the article doesn't end on a dour note. The author cites The Incredibles as the exact opposite of this trend, with a strong mother figure coupled with a loving but flawed father figure, creating a compelling film and, in my opinion, the best Pixar movie. One of the things I enjoyed about this piece is Boxer takes on the somewhat controversial nature head-on. Each section after the opening begins with, "Dear reader, I hear you objecting." It's a fun device and shows that thought is being put into the piece. You may disagree with some points, but overall the essay is a fun and effective review of a bizarre film phenomenon. This has been The Geekly Scholar. For a link to this article, find me on Twitter at Mr. Anthropology.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.